32, so we have it before us, and then I have a author's amendment, which is a delete-all that reflects some changes that were made in the bill when it passed through the House committee, as well as some the result of some conversation we had with people at the department with respect to the fiscal note. So I move Senate File 32.
Senator Hahn has moved this Senate File 32 and moves to amend Senate File 32. Do you have a delete-all amendment?
Madam Chair and members, you should have a copy of it's the A2 amendment. I'd like to, as an author's amendment, move the delete-all A2 amendment.
Senator Hahn, could you explain the amendment after everyone has it? It should be in our packets. Is that correct?
Yes. And members, what this reflects are changes in the original bill as it was written. It reflects, as this went through the House committee, there were a couple of changes that were made in the House. And so this is to try to make sure that our bill is consistent with the House bill. In addition, there is some language that we put in to deal with the some of the things in the fiscal note that were questions. I think notably, if you look, sections 1 and 2 are additions to the bill as it was originally submitted, and it may be it.
Senator Hahn has moved the A2 amendment. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hahn, is a fiscal note affected by the amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the fiscal note reflects the things that are included in the amendment.
Thank you.
Any question on the A3 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This afternoon, what we have is a proposal to bring about some change to the Minnesota CARE program that we have had in our state for some time, which is a health care insurance structure for low-income Minnesotans. This is an idea that has been percolating around the legislature for the past 2 or 3 years. I've worked with Representative Gottwald in the House and members of the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters who are here today to also make a brief presentation. But what this represents is an attempt to do a couple of things. One is to find some cost savings to a insurance structure for lower-income Minnesotans, and also to try to restore the idea that the private insurance markets are available and willing to provide products that can be of use to all Minnesotans. And so what we're proposing in the bill is essentially a structure that would require a defined contribution to be made to those eligible for the Minnesota CARE program. And if you look on the bill in the delete all amendment on page 2, it describes in subdivision 3 a schedule that shows what that monthly per person base contribution would be. This is also would be adjusted by income level. So there would be some flexibility. This is the base schedule, and then there would be some way to adjust that based on level of income. If you look in subdivision 3, after the first paragraph, persons with household incomes equal to 133% of the federal poverty guidelines would be 150% of the base contribution. If a person or household has 175% of the federal poverty guidelines, it would be 100% of the base contribution, and incomes of greater than 250%, the defined contribution would be 80% of the base contribution. And then it provides for a some sliding scale to interpolate between those ranges. So that's basically the idea. This would, as it is written, would primarily apply to single adults without children, partly out of recognition that as the federal laws impinge on what we're doing right now under Minnesota Care, that program has received a waiver from the federal government. We have, as part of this bill, are seeking a waiver, but because it's uncertain whether that waiver would be granted, the fiscal note assumes that the waiver would not be granted. But just so you know, we are requesting a waiver that would allow this to apply to families with children. But that is the concept, in at least in broad overview. I'd like to ask John Tyler and does Tom want to join us? And Tom Asleason from the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters to join us. I think they have a brief presentation on this bill that they'd like to make.
I'll go first. Thank you, Senator Han, Madam Chair. This is an idea or a concept that is a little bit different, perhaps, than what this committee has seen before. What we're really applying here is a financial planning approach to dealing with a fiscal issue as well as a coverage issue for the adults without children population of Minnesota Care. When I say a financial planning issue, what I'm referring to there or here is just simply applying a science called actuarial science to the process of issuing insurance coverage. That is the process of risk management. And the risk management, as we talked about before in the Insurance 101 or general overview presentation that we did last time we were here, talks a little bit about how critically important to maintaining the solvency of the insurance companies as well as the lowest possible rate to do a process of health screening, much like you would associate with purchasing a disability policy or a life insurance policy or a long-term care policy or any other type of individual policy. This is simply buying individual health insurance coverage. That lends itself to a number of issues that I think are somewhat problematic as far as the current system is concerned. First one is being portability. From in the event that individuals no longer qualify for Minnesota Care, they're able to take it with them, into the private sector, into the job market, or what have you. The other part of it is there's a limit right now of a $10,000 inpatient hospital maximum for adults that exists under the current Minnesota Care plan design. What we're trying to do is enhance that, going to an unlimited or a multimillion-dollar plan design rather than a $10,000 inpatient maximum. So we're trying to provide preventive care, first-dollar prescription drug coverage, and so on, that would allow them to purchase coverage in the private sector. And the base of premiums chosen were simply lifted from a private insurance product that's actually in the marketplace today. It happens to be with Medica. But there are similar plans available through Health Partners, through Blue Cross and Blue Shield, through Preferred One, and so on, that individuals could choose if they chose to. Any private insurance policy will do. And individuals currently have quite a bit of skin in the game as far as premium sharing is concerned. This would allow them to actually choose whether they wanted to upgrade to a more Cadillac type of insurance policy or use those cost savings, premium savings, towards co-pays and deductibles and those kinds of things at their discretion. And so that's the individual would simply have a contribution that's weighted by age, it's weighted by income to the private market, and then purchase their coverage accordingly that they would seek out for themselves. They would go through an underwriting process or health screening process that everyone goes through when they buy individual insurance. I don't know anybody who's found it a fatal experience to go through health underwriting and get their own individual coverage actually issued. And so this would be something they could port with them really as indefinitely if they're on Minnesota Care or not on Minnesota Care from that point forward. And so we're trying to provide maximum flexibility, something that's going to integrate with what's already available in the marketplace as well, and at the same time save quite a bit of money. That the most recent fiscal note that we've had projected quite a bit of savings. And there are many that look at that and they scratch their heads and they say, well, how in the world could this plan be so much less expensive than what's being offered right now? How does that work? And the answer to that, back to my initial comment, was risk management. Risk management, the process of underwriting, allows for that process. That risk screening is a science, if you will, that is absolutely imperative to affordable premiums. And that's something that right now the current system doesn't actually have.
Thank you, Mr. Asleson. Or Mr. Tyler, Mr. Asleson.
My name is Tom Asleson. Thank you for letting me come here today. Everyone calls it Asleson. That name gets slaughtered all the time. Just a little background on me. I've been in the employee benefits business for 33 years. I've first 20 years I worked for various health insurance carriers, and I became an agent 13 years ago. Married 30 years, have four kids in college at this very moment. And have been very much on the receiving side of healthcare. I've, by God's grace, I have been spared, shocked back to life four different times through the defibrillator that I'm wearing. I've had four of them, had nine heart procedures, open heart surgery. One of the things that is really, I think when you're an agent and a broker, you can kind of take an approach that you're just doing your business and not, you know, it doesn't really matter. You're just delivering policies. But when you've experienced it yourself, you've been on the other side, and you know how critical it is to provide good health care, it makes a huge impact. And so that has touched my life in a big way. Had the privilege this summer to work on Senator Scheid and Representative Loeffler's committee, and it was a great experience working on health care, that small group expansion. On this Senate File 32, I was telling John that. Pardon me.
Move your slide forward.
Oh, I thought you were gonna. Okay. Got it. All right. I'm just going to run through some of the bullet points on this plan, and I want to just highlight a couple of things as I look through here. You know, currently, you know, this bill, Minnesota Care, Senator Berglund, it was 20 years ago that the bill was introduced as Health Right, became Minnesota Care, and we were involved in watching that 20 years ago to what became Minnesota Care today. We're seeing now 5% of the cost is actually paid for by the adults without children that we're talking about here of the overall budget. And as we look at 776,000 people on health plans, government health plans in Minnesota right now, we've got 609,000 of those on medical assistance. We've got 132,000 on MinCare, of which 76,000 we're talking about here impacting with this bill, and 35,000 on GAMC. So I think it's important to at least have a perspective that we're talking about people in a family of three that can earn up to $50,376 a year on this Minnesota Care plan. We're not imposing this on the destitute, on the GMAC people, the MA. We're talking about people that are working, that are involved. I've had a number of clients that have had Minnesota Care, and they've either fallen below or reached that $50,000 mark, have had to go on and off the plan. So what we're talking about is the working poor, those earning up to $50,376. And I think the big issue, as we've talked to Senator Han, was the matter of this mandatory disenrollment. You know, could this be a possibility? And I think doing what we're doing here is going to be a lesser cost to the state of Minnesota. We're using individual private market, as John indicated, products in place of Minnesota Care, and we're taking that adult population without children, not impacting federal funds in any way, and taking advantage of the risk management underwriting that we're used in all facets of health care. And what we're doing, when we talk about this at the bottom of this page, a state-based risk pool, MCHA, it would be done exactly the way it is now. People that have coverage, certainly me, I would, if I didn't have my own group plan, I would be on an MCHA-type program. They would have the option to go into this plan as well. The next slide here, we just talk about reducing the cost to cover adults without care, children on Minnesota Care. The fiscal note talks about $112,000 savings over a two-year period. And, we, again, are talking about 10%, the most affluent 10% of the 776,000 on government programs in Minnesota. And it brings, by doing this, we think there's a significant way to bring stability to the Healthcare Access Fund. do this at a price that is very reasonable. And I've seen it working for health carriers for 20 years, the capitated model, or it's a little bit more complicated than that in the Minnesota care model, but bringing a fee-for-service approach to this and hopefully avoiding it. And I remember back when Minnesota Care was passed, there's a component of that, of the Minnesota Care Act, 62J.015, talked about bringing together cost containment features on all the private sector. And I think it's time for us to maybe impose some of those and bring those together on a government program as well. We've talked a number of times about increasing the private health care, the access to private health care because of the commercial reimbursement. We heard a doctor 2 weeks ago in the in the House talk about there's only two remaining clinics in Minneapolis. And why is that? It's because doctors are refusing care. The reimbursement levels are low. This is an approach that increases those reimbursement levels. Access to care is huge. And I've seen clients that have had to struggle through the situation, and this gives them this opportunity where they can, I truly believe, when providers are paid at a different level and have better reimbursement, they're not going to be denying care. And that is happening. I've seen it firsthand. The other thing I've seen is I met last year a couple of times with the folks at Legal Aid, Lisa and Maureen, and we talked about the time and the energy they're spending with those that exceed that $10,000 cap. That is a big deal. They indicated that they're spending time litigating for people that exceeded that $1,000 cap for adults. It's a real problem. And by going to an individual plan, they get a choice. They can go to Blue Cross. They can go to Medica. They can go to Preferred One. They can go whoever they want to go to and provide obtain a product that has unlimited benefits. And interestingly, from my background, to go from maybe a $5 or $3 million lifetime maximum to an unlimited, it's only about a 1% increase in premiums. I believe Health Partners last year had 28 of their entire member base, 28 people meet the $1 million maximum. So it's not a high claim situation, high incidence situation, but the incidence above 10,000 is staggering. Bear with me here. The other issue that I think runs hand in hand with this is we've got 96 right now community health plans that exist in Minnesota, and we want to make sure that we participate with them and use their services in a effective way. The private sector shifting costs away here, the first bullet point there, when we shift costs away from the private sector onto the government plans, it causes all the small employers, all the individuals, all those people that are using the health care to have increased trends and increased costs. We are talking about what 1/7 of our spending is on health care, and this product, this plan, clearly is a jobs issue, clearly provides jobs to people in that sector. I mentioned briefly the community health centers, 96 of them in our state. These are areas where we've talked with some of these individuals that have the capacity, have the ability to use that, and people coming to them with a Medica or a Blue Cross or a P1 or a Assurant ID card will have access to that care. And we think that that's a critical component of integrating this private market solution. And again, portability. Every one of us wants portability. That question comes out every single week in my business about portability, not having coverage, going off of COBRA. Where do you go for that? Taking this approach, they're going to be able to pick what's best. They're going to have portability like an individual plan, and it provides, that peace of mind that people have. I mean, I know, having spent $600,000 plus on health care, being blessed to be here today period because of some of the technology that's available. It's an amazing thing. So clearly we want to save taxpayer dollars. Clearly we want to avoid having any disenrollment occur. And with that, I'll open it up to any comments or questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Athelson.
You're welcome.
And Mr. Tyler. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Albrecht, if you could maybe comment a little bit on the fiscal note that we have. I know Mr. Athelson referred to it. I'm not sure that the numbers that he had in his presentation are reflecting the most current fiscal note. And could you walk us through that briefly, please?
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, if you look at the front page of the fiscal note, excuse me, the bottom lines there where it says net cost or savings show that for this proposal, the savings are in the healthcare access fund. For the 12 and 13 biennium, it would be the first two numbers there, so about $21.1 million in savings. And in 14 and 15, when it's fully implemented, $43 million in savings in 2014 and $49 million in savings in 2015 for a total in that biennium of $92 million.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Albrecht. I know we've got some other folks that wanted to testify. I think we show on the list Dr. Peter Daly, but my understanding is that he's not going to be here today, so we should remove him from our list of testifiers. And maybe we'd, if there are questions for the current presenters, we should take those, and otherwise we could go on to
Senator Berkland.
Madam Chair, I just thought as long as we were looking at the fiscal note that we should look at it a little more thoroughly. On page 3 of page 6 of the fiscal note, you will note that the defined contribution's cash value in this bill is about 40% less than the expected cost of the Minnesota Care benefit today, and that's including the hospital cap. Which I might add, when I was in the majority, we tried to remove the cap a couple of times, and we were met with resistance or vetoes from Governor Pawlenty, and he would not let us raise the hospital cap. So I'm not sure exactly where people are going to be getting less coverage, according to your overheads, the coverage is going to be better, but it can't be better if the value is 40% less. So I expect probably what's going to happen is that the cost schedule that you've got in the bill is for high deductible plans. And, you know, if we're paying 40% less than the value of the Minnesota Care benefit. The Minnesota Care benefit is without any deductibles on outpatient care. So I'm just wondering, where will this 40% less come in the form of the coverage?
Senator, Mr. Tyler.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, Senator Berglund. I'd like to take just a moment to address that. There's a couple of areas here that were the insurance portion of the coverage differ from the current Minnesota Care model. The coverage that is being quoted here or shown here is essentially a co-paced structure plan. The co-pays will range based anywhere from $30 to $70 per office visit, depending upon the plan that the subscriber chooses underneath this model. You're correct. This is intended to be a more basic style major medical plan that has this emphasis on the high end as far as catastrophic major medical coverage is concerned. As Mr. Athelson mentioned a moment ago, this is very important to understand that this is intended to coordinate with the community health clinics. So if an individual, you know, chooses to go to the community health clinics that are largely federally funded, they can seek waivers of those copays from those clinics, who are set up primarily to offer treatment to individuals, low to low-income individuals. So it's really a coordination of efforts here. They could also seek out dental services and or vision services as well from the community health clinics as well. That is an area of current coverage under the current Minnesota care model, vision and dental, that isn't part of this particular model. But it's important to realize that we're trying to integrate services between the community health clinics and the catastrophic insurance coverage to provide the total picture as far as treatment is concerned.
Senator Burke.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Tyler, I don't believe every community in Minnesota has a community health center in it. Do they?
I'm not aware.
Mr. Tyler.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Excuse me, Senator Brooklyn. Excuse me. I think when you get out to the outlying areas that, you know, there'll be fewer of them. Most of them are concentrated where the population is in the Twin Cities area right now. And one area of suggestion, because we are showing some prospective savings here, would be to place as an order of priority some of the savings, at least I would suggest, you know, just respectfully suggest for your consideration, that some of the savings we're projecting here go back to help beef up and bolster and perhaps increase the number of community health clinics throughout Minnesota, to increase it from 96 to whatever is necessary. So that's just a suggestion, but you're correct. You know, not every Minnesotan can just step out their back door and fall into a community health clinic.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Tyler, I'm one of the lucky people here on this committee today because I have a community health center in my district. But they don't have room for any more patients. They are overflowing at the seams. So it would be highly unlikely that somebody that's got Minnesota Care today and is going to a private clinic would be able to get into a community clinic if they had this type of coverage. And Madam Chair, I think the other important thing for me to point out is that AMSHA, the best policy you can get under AMSHA, which I'm not sure that this premium structure would allow you to pay for it, but the best policy you can get is a $500 deductible 80-20 copay, which is a substantially different benefit set than what Minnesota Care has in it today. And a large number of people in this bill would be forced to go into AMSHA and would have far fewer benefits, far less coverage than they would have today under Minnesota Care.
Senator
Madam Chair, Senator Brooklyn,
Mr. Tyler.
That's a very good point, and that's one of the reasons that it's been suggested, and I believe it's been included in the bill, that our mirror plan to the Medica Solo plan be included as part of this legislation in the MCHA, so they can have a duplicate opportunity. They can buy any plan that's available in the MCHA if they choose, including a copay structure much like the lowest out of pocket under the Medica Solo contract.
Senator Higgins.
Where does it say that?
Was Senator Brooklyn done?
Oh, Senator Brooklyn. Sorry.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to know if someone could point out to me where the bill says that.
Mr. Tyler.
Senator Berglund, it may be that particular provision has been included on the House bill, House File 8, rather than this one as yet. That is the suggestion, and that is the intent, that a duplicate plan contract be made available should they want to choose it. Actually, it would probably be a lower cost than what's being offered presently.
So, Madam Chair, it's not in
Senator
this
Berglund.
Bill?
Apparently not.
Thank you.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question, I suppose, for Mr. Tyler or maybe Mr. Asleason. Do you know of any coverage now that provides what Mr. Tyler called a multi-million-dollar plan, including chemical and mental health coverage? And do you have any idea what the cost per month of that would be?
Mr. Asleason.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, there actually all these plans have I was referring to the cap, have a multi-million dollar limit on them. Any of these plans we're recommending, whether it's a Medica Solo or a Blue Cross, Options Blue, all have a multi-million dollar unlimited cap. Am I answering the question?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Higgins.
So then, Madam Chair and Mr. Asleason, I'm looking at the Medica one just because it's the first one I grabbed. So about half, halfway through, I picked out the chart that has mental health and substance abuse coverage and generic-only prescriptions, so you know which one I'm looking at. And if I take the smallest deductible, $3,000, it's $107.83, which would match, it would come under the amount that's provided for in this bill, except for the $3,000 deductible, which I don't know anybody who's making $1,200 a month, which is the the guidelines for a single person in poverty at 133% of poverty. Their maximum income is $1,200.33 a month. So, so the idea of getting the $3,000 deductible before you start getting the coverage when you're making that small amount of money, I mean, that's the amount of money I made in 1975 or something. You know, it's so far out of the realm of possibility that you could be making that small amount of money, paying your taxes, paying your rent, paying your food, and then having $3,000 left over to pay anything toward your health care, it isn't reality. So I'm really concerned about whether the practical effect of what this bill would be to just throw people off of health care coverage. It wouldn't be providing something because they couldn't get to the high deductible to start with.
Madam Chair, and Senator Higgins,
Mr. Asleason,
the integral part about this bill is that there is reimbursement through Senate File 32, as well as employee contribution like they're paying now on an age-bracketed basis. But if you look at the cost of the premium, I think you have it there in front of you, and look, match it up with the, I don't have it opened up, I don't actually have the pages open up to the reimbursement. We have that in the, but if you look at these reimbursements, they're gonna be more reimbursement than the cost of the plan, and then there's funding for a portion of that high deductible health plan through the bill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Asleason,
Senator Higgins,
it would by $20, less than $20 a month, because it shows a single person, 21 to 29, would get $122.79 per month. That person would be making no more than $1,200 a month, and the cost on the Medica plan is 107. So the 107 is under the 122, but you've still got this big honking gap of the deductible.
Mr. Tyler?
Maybe yes. That's...
Madam Chair, Senator Hinn, Senator Higgins. Presently, the out-of-pocket cost for an individual on Minnesota Care ranges from $4 per month all the way up to $100 a month based on their income. Or more. And if they have family situations, can be that much multiple. So what we have presently that's costing the subscriber under Minnesota Care is really the total cost of Minnesota Care, plus their out-of-pocket expense towards the premiums. They still have that amount of money, that out-of-pocket that's going towards their premiums, available to them in addition to what's being indicated here as far as the premiums are concerned. If we added that amount of money to this, plus the lower the income, the higher the reimbursement amount. So yet that much out of pocket is the total amount that they actually have available to use, whether they choose to buy a more comprehensive insurance policy, whether they choose to use those premium savings towards their co-pays or what have you, some skin in the game as far as claims are concerned, really is left up to the individual. So how much they spend in total is really largely up to them as far as their total expenses are concerned. To what degree they choose to use a community health clinic or whatever is really up to them. I think the increasing access or increasing dollars to flow into the community health clinics is being made available through these private policies. So in the event we're trying to increase funding through the use of private insurance to the community health clinics at the same time. that they should choose to use a community health clinic. So amounts above the copay are prospectively payable to the community health clinic as well. So we have the total amount that's eligible to be paid needs to be looked at. How much are they paying now? Plus, what's the reimbursement? Is the total amount they have available to purchase insurance on the private market?
I didn't get that. I'm sorry. Well, you're saying
Senator
that,
Higgins.
Madam Chair. I'm sorry. You have to learn this all over again every year, don't we? So you're saying that this bill would provide more than the $122.79 a month?
Mr. Taylor.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, it would, because it would actually provide them, first of all, the lower the income, the higher the reimbursement. Okay, so there's an adjustment there. If they're on the MCHA, I get an adjustment of 20%.
No, I'm talking specifically about this, not MCHA.
No, but there's a provision in the bill should they go on MCHA. And they're to increase their level of reimbursement by 20%
yes,
factor. So there's
I
that
saw
part of
that.
It. So let's assume for a minute that right now they're in the $122 per month premium reimbursement category. And right now they're paying $50 per month to be on Minnesota Care.
Okay.
The $122 plus the $50 will give you the $172 that is currently being spent right now on their behalf. So they can either choose to use that additional $50 towards their copays, or they can buy a more comprehensive coverage plan at their discretion.
Okay,
Senator Higgins.
I got that. But I'm still back to the deductible. And they would have to put $3,000, for example, out of pocket before they'd get any coverage at all for any of it, for any of these plans that I see. Because that's the minimum deductible that I've seen on any of these.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Tyler.
Senator Higgins. Actually, this plan is a combination of first dollar preventive care, copay structure for out of pocket office expenses, and first dollar prescription benefits as well. And they can purchase a little bit more coverage in the area. They can choose either generic prescriptions or a little more comprehensive if they wish. It's designed to be a copay structure, and the chances are pretty strong that if they're going to hit that out of pocket liability expense, it's going to be due to an in hospital type of circumstance. So they can apply what they're paying in premiums, or if they can choose to buy a plan that has a lower out-of-pocket liability with what they're paying out-of-pocket now towards their current Minnesota Care.
$50 divided into $3,000 is a whole lot.
Senator Hahn, I apologize. I did not allow you to respond to Senator Berglund's question about if her question was in the bill, that portion.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and I did not want to interrupt the discussion here, but I did have given a notice that we've got someone here from the Department of Human Services that helped with the development of the fiscal note, and I think Senator Berglund raised a question that might be appropriate if we could call on him to join us and maybe provide an answer to what they assumed in the note.
Absolutely. Senator Hahn. Welcome, Mr. Greenman.
Afternoon. Dave Greenman with the Department of Human Services. I think I was asked to discuss the assumption regarding the benefit value of the benefits, or the comparison of the value of the benefits. It's as it states in the fiscal note that we just assumed that the cash value of the defined contribution based on our estimate of the average defined contribution is less than, or it's expected to be expected to cost less than 40% of what we currently spend on Minnesota Care per member per month, less after net of the premium. Not sure if that answers the question.
Any questions, Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Greenman, so if a person was buying a policy under this bill that cost less than what the amount that they would be allowed in the bill would be for, say they were buying a $10,000 deductible, so the premium that was allowed for them was more than the cost of the premium, what would they be allowed to spend that on under the bill?
Mr. Greenman.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I'm following you.
Senator Berglund?
Mr. Greenman, the testimony was people could use their subsidy to pay for their copayments. Would you have any way to know if they were using it for that or if they were using it for something else, like their car payment?
Mr. Greenman?
Madam Chair, my understanding from the bill as it was introduced, and maybe this isn't correct, but my understanding was that we paid the subsidy directly to the insurance company as a premium subsidy.
So Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair and Mr. Greenman, if the subsidy that they got was more than the cost of the policy, then you would just pay the cost of the policy and they would not be able to get any money to subsidize their co-payments, as was just testified here.
Mr. Greenman.
Senator Berglund, Madam Chair, I believe that's the way the bill's drafted, but I may not be correct. I'm not sure. That's my understanding, though.
Okay, well, thank you for that clarification. So,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, back to Senator Higgins' point, if there's a $3,000 deductible, that would be the individual's responsibility. If there's a $30 or $70 office copayment, that would be the individual's responsibility. And somehow or another, the individual is going to make up the 40% difference in what the value of what you're providing them under this bill, Senator Han, and what the Minnesota Care program would have provided them.
Comment to make?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Tyler.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the individual would actually have that much in savings, in monthly cost savings to themselves, because they would not be that dollars they're spending right now to be on Minnesota Care. But if they chose an insurance policy that would purchase them something that's being illustrated, just as examples, not necessarily as requirements, they would basically have that difference in lower costs to them that they could, if needed, apply that towards their out-of-pocket medical expenses, towards co-pays and those types of things. So that's really just an increased net income because of the reduced premium saving or reduced cost savings to them is where they would actually provide that money. And if they chose to purchase a set of new tires or something for their car with that difference, that's really up to them. You know, they chose to purchase a $10,000 deductible plan, it would not be necessarily prudent, but it would be up to them to make that choice.
Well, I figure
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Mr. Tyler, I figure the person in the lowest income category at the lowest age level would have all of $7.33 that they would have to spend on their $30 to $70 copayment for one visit to the doctor. We're talking about people here for a couple who make $20,000 a year, an individual making $15,000 a year. I just don't think they're going to be able to afford the health care that you're giving them, and so I don't think that there's going to be very many people who are going to want to sign up for this type of coverage.
Mr. Tyler.
I think the fiscal reality of the present state of the health care access fund, I think, really requires us to maybe perhaps think a little bit differently about the level of coverage that, you know, that's being offered. And I think everyone in this room would love to be able to provide Cadillac coverage for low-income individuals. What the health care access fund fiscal situation is by 2014 is, if it continues on, mandatory disenrollment is going to have to begin. What we're trying to do is trying to provide a means of salvaging the healthcare access fund, and providing something is better than nothing. And I think that's really where we are with regard to the healthcare access fund. And so these are our suggestions to try to cure a number of issues that are going on. If you choose to increase the level of reimbursement and reduce the savings, I guess that's what's certainly within your authority. But the purpose of this is really as much to salvage the healthcare access fund as it is to do anything.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, Mr. Tyler, and Senator Han, if Senator Han wants me to help show him how to balance the health care access fund without this bill, I would be happy to do it.
Senator Han, you have some other testifiers?
Madam Chair, there are a number of
others. Excuse me, Senator Han. Senator Sharon.
Yes, I want to understand that as you're talking about these decisions that a person can make in terms of how they expend their allowable supports based on income, and they could, if there were some excess, improve the plan in some way to a Cadillac plan or a higher level plan. That raises the question in my mind that is a person able in this process to purchase a plan that would not have mental health or chemical dependency coverage?
Looks like it.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Tyler.
Yes, I'm assuming you're talking to me.
Okay. I would accept an answer from someone who knows the answer.
Yeah, the answer is yes. The answer, if they chose to include it or exclude it, it'd be up to them.
And, Senator Sharon?
I don't know if any of you would be able to answer this question, but you have a sense in the analysis of the particular population that we're talking about here, how high the problems are with mental health and chemical dependency problems in the lowest income population?
Mr. Asleyson.
Madam Chair and Senator, I don't have a specific number that I can give you in mental health. I don't. Pulling a number out of my head, I think.
Mr. Tyler.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, that information as far as the type of claims breakout that this population had was requested, and that information actually was not forthcoming from the respective carriers, at least not yet. So we really don't have the kind of breakout as to this is the percentage of claims from this particular category or not. It was just never made available to us.
Senator Sharon.
And if somebody purchases and the coverage isn't a part of their plan, how will their services for mental health or chemical dependency be addressed? Would they be sent to these community service centers or safety net systems?
Mr. Tyler.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, in the private market right now outside of Minnesota Care, someone has that type of experience, what they do is apply to the MCHA. They actually have a six-month pre-existing condition limitation, and beyond that point, they have full coverage after the deductible of their choice.
On MCHA.
On MCHA, correct.
Senator Sharon.
And so have you calculated in the additional costs that there will be assessments for the small businesses for paying for MCHA for this population?
Mr. Tyler.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, the assumption was the a rate of 32% of this particular population would be going into the MCHA. And
Excuse me, Mr. Tyler, can you use your microphone better, please?
Sorry.
Thank you.
The premise is that any kind of shortcomings that might be experienced by the MCHA would be backfilled, you know, from this bill, from the savings. So an important part of this bill is that the mandatory backfilling of MCHA in the event it runs, you know, lower than expected.
Excuse me. Just to be clear, are you talking about the state's contribution to that or the assessment that is applied for MCHA to small businesses and individual policies through the insurance carriers?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Tyler.
Senator Sharon, no increase in the percentage of MCHA surcharge, the 2.7% that's charged to the fully insured plans, individual and group, has been assumed here. It's simply a backfill, you know, from the Healthcare Access Fund as needed through the savings.
Senator Hamm.
Madam Chair, I know we've got some other people who want to testify, and I want to make sure we have an opportunity to hear from people who are interested in commenting on the bill. So I'd like to, if we are ready, to accept other testimony.
So we have Ms. Afterholden and Mr. Schaefer, please. Could you both come up to save some time here? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, yes. Members of the committee. My name is Sue Afterholden. I'm the executive director of NAMI Minnesota, which stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we're a statewide grassroots organization dedicated to improving the lives of children and adults with mental illnesses and their families. And we are not a provider organization. Nearly 100% of our board and staff live with a mental illness or have a family member with a mental illness. NAMI is very concerned about the proposed changes to Minnesota Care and the impact that it will have on access to mental health services. In 2007, the legislature passed the Mental Health Initiative, which was a bipartisan effort to improve the mental health system. One of the provisions was the adoption of the model mental health benefit set for all public programs, general assistance medical care, medical assistance, and Minnesota Care. These benefits were selected based on research and evidence of effectiveness and included crisis teams, residential treatment for children and adults, intensive outpatient treatment, assertive community treatment teams, adult rehab mental health services, and children's therapeutic services and supports. Our hope was that these benefits would, over time, be adopted by the private sector as well. This has begun to happen, but the full set has not been fully adopted by private health plans. If Senate File 32 were to pass, these benefits, which are cost and treatment effective, would now only be available under medical assistance and would no longer be available for children or adults under Minnesota care. We are concerned not only that people won't be able to access the model mental health benefit set, but that they won't have coverage for any mental health or medication or substance abuse benefits at all. Now, some of you might be saying to yourself, well, what about mental health parity? Well, mental health parity doesn't require you to cover mental health care. It just says if you cover mental health, then you have to do it in the same way as you cover other types of health care. In addition, policies for small employers are exempt, as are policies for individuals. In Minnesota, we've had a strong commitment from our private health plans to cover mental health. In fact, even though they weren't required to cover mental health treatment for small employers, they did until the legislature passed a law saying that they had to have flexible benefit policies that were free of mandates, including mental health. So they don't have to cover mental health benefits for individual policies. Many allow you to opt out of mental health or substance abuse benefits in order to lower your premiums. The Health Partners 3 for Me plan covers mental health office visits, 3 of them, but the rest aren't covered until you hit the deductible, which is between $4,000 and $10,000. Many add extra if you want coverage, substance abuse coverage, such as Blue Cross Blue Shield. Looking at the Medica Solo plan, which you have in front of you, I would point out that there are 3 office visits covered under the plan with a $30 copay. These visits could include a psychiatrist, licensed independent clinical social worker, psychologist, or other mental health professional. But after 3 visits, the individual would have to reach their deductible, which is between $3,000 and $12,000, before the health plan would cover 80% of the cost of the visit. It's pretty rare to only need 3 visits to a therapist. Now, if you need something more intense, such as day treatment, residential services, even a mental health crisis team, the individual would be responsible for the entire cost until the deductible is met. Additionally, you may need to look more carefully into what medications are covered. Is it in the formulary? Is it a name brand? Is it a generic? Medica Solo does allow people to delete their mental health and substance abuse coverage and lower their premiums. Thus, there will be an incentive under this bill to purchase a policy that does not include coverage for mental health benefits. For those that have a pre-existing condition, such as depression, they will not be able to purchase a policy and so will need to go to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. I know you've heard a lot about the payments, but I'd ask you to look at the specifics. And I did bring a copy of the rates, just in case people haven't looked at them for a long time. So, for example, if you take a 36-year-old who has bipolar disorder, his income is $14,403. My calculations, according to this bill, he would get about $204 to purchase a premium. He could have afforded the premium under Medica Solo, but due to his illness, he will be denied. Under MSHA, his premium would be $401 for the $500 deductible and $299 for the $1,000 deductible. The other thing you need to look at is what if you were 55? Then you would probably only be able to afford the high deductible plan, which could be as much as 70% of your income. High deductible plans create huge obstacles for low-income people. Study after study show that people delay medical visits due to costs. A Commonwealth report found that 38% of adults with deductibles of $1,000 or more reported at least one of 4 cost-related access problems, such as not filling a prescription, not getting specialist care, skipping a recommended test or follow-up, or having a medical problem and not visiting a doctor. 58% reported difficulties paying medical bills or paying off accumulated debt. We already see in our mental health system that families with high deductible plans cannot afford basic mental health services, and mental health providers are increasing their bad debt and losing out on funding. Minnesota Care is the antithesis of a high deductible plan. It covers basic care and mental health treatment to prevent higher cost care. It is, if you will, an anti-catastrophic plan. What you are offering under this bill is a catastrophic plan. NAMI is concerned that this bill would create barriers to accessing care due to the fact that high deductible plans will be the only thing that people can afford, and the full range of mental health benefits are not covered, and people will opt out of purchasing mental health coverage. Now, you could say, well, it's their choice, but who among us knows what illness we will develop over time? 1 in 4 will develop a mental illness during the coming year, but very few people think that they or a family member will develop depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety, or even schizophrenia. I truly cannot imagine that anyone here in this room would encourage a health plan to exclude coverage for heart disease, cancer, or diabetes. Marathon runners have heart attacks. Non-smokers develop lung cancer. Nothing in life is certain, but again, we as a society would be outraged if there wasn't coverage for heart disease or cancer, for example. But for some reason, it's okay when it comes to mental illness. Their choice could affect our choices. When private insurance doesn't cover mental health care, then it falls back on our public funding, such as state or county grants, to cover the uninsured and underinsured. I would remind you that you cut $11 million last year from the grants that cover mental health treatment for the uninsured and underinsured, and you likely will vote to cut money for the children's mental health under the CCSA block grant that does the same for children who are uninsured or underinsured. Of course, more likely it will be our criminal justice system that pays. For youth with untreated mental illness end up in the juvenile justice system and adults in the criminal justice at significant numbers. 70% of young people in the juvenile justice system have one or more mental health diagnoses, and estimates are that it's 25% of our prison population and 60% in our jails. The other option is for families to simply take on the debt to pay for medications, treatment, hospitalizations, and more. We've all seen posters for fundraisers to help people pay for medical debts, but these debts, these families will have to face alone. I'm here to tell you there are no bake sales for mental illnesses. I know and recognize that you're trying to find new and more cost-effective ways of running the Minnesota Care Program, and I'm certainly no expert on insurance, but I truly believe that this change will have a negative impact on the mental health of Minnesotans currently on Minnesota Care, and will place an increased demand on other programs that are quite likely to see further decreases and will be unable to meet these needs. This is state-collected money, and the state should require that certain treatment, such as mental illness, is covered. Do not put family through the horrendous situation of finding out that your insurance doesn't cover needed treatment. Please make sure that Minnesota Care covers mental health treatment and services.
Thank you, Ms. Afterholden. Any questions? Mr. Schaefer.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members. My name is Matt Schaefer with the American Cancer Society. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. As we're looking at Senate File 32, it definitely provides a fascinating approach to providing coverage to those policyholders currently enrolled under Minnesota Care. As discussions continue, we'd urge you to take just a couple of items into consideration, one of which has been discussed pretty extensively earlier today. But for beginners, as policyholders make the switch, if this becomes law, from Minnesota Care to a private policy plan or to a high-risk pool, we just urge the committee and the department to take steps needed to ensure that's a seamless transition where policyholders aren't experiencing a lapse or possibly reduction in coverage. The second option to keep in mind is really relates to deductibles, and I know there has been some talk about that. I think it's very encouraging that there is language in here seeking to make premiums more affordable, but in the case of cancer patients in particular, it's those co-pays, those deductibles, and the co-insurance that really add up, and they can cause quite a burden. We've actually been very appreciative of the House author's willingness to kind of hear our concerns. We've had open lines of communications with Representative Gottwalt, and we definitely hope for an opportunity to work with Senator Hahn as well. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Ms. Krinke and Ms. Bodine, please come up. Afternoon, Ms. Krinke.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I'd like to start out with a general comment about the bill and then provide three specific comments with the bill. I was struck by something that Mr. Tyler said, and I do think it is important to put this bill in perspective. Our state programs are going to dramatically change in the course of the next 2 years. It's a combination of something that I know some of the Republicans on the committee don't particularly like, but in light of the federal health care reform bill, the population below 133% of the federal poverty guidelines are likely to be on Medicaid. And the population above that amount is likely to be purchasing private insurance on a health insurance exchange. And this bill actually sort of lines up with the federal health care reform bill. I know that that is not Senator Hand's intentions, but there is some actually alignment with the federal health care reform bill. Also, in light of our state budget shortfall, we recognize that there are going to be changes in our public programs. And the Hospital Association has looked at this, and while we may not be in love with all the provisions in the bill, our number one concern is that people maintain some form of coverage. And while we may be paying for different coverage, we are cautiously supporting this legislation. We think it is important for low-income people to have access to some type of coverage, and it may not be the same coverage they have today. So with that, the Hospital Association has taken a position of cautious support. I would like to point out three specifics with the bill, if I can, and I think Senator Hand has already addressed one of them in his amendment. The bill originally identified two groups of population that this bill would be available for, single adults without children above 133%, and adults with children above 133%. And just as Senator Hand said, the population with children, we receive a federal match from the federal government for their participation in Minnesota Care. We would not want to move that population out of Minnesota Care and jeopardize the loss of federal funding, which does support our health care access fund. So the bill starts out with single adults above 133 without children. The second comment that we would like to make is the discussion that has been going on here today. We recognize that probably what people will purchase is a high deductible health plan. That is what, for the amount of money that is provided, they are likely to purchase. Now, from the hospital's perspective, and I realize that's just one sector, but we see uncompensated care now in Minnesota Care. There's a $1,000 deductible that somebody has to pay when they come into the hospital, and there's the $10,000 cap. So from a hospital's perspective, are you going to have more uncompensated care with a high deductible plan, or are you going to have more uncompensated care with the $10,000 cap? And quite frankly, we don't know the answer to that. We think that this bill could be strengthened if there was an overall threshold for the size of the high deductible. And I'm not sure if the actuarialists can come up with a threshold. Could that number be 3,000? Could that number be 4,000? But right now, the legislation has no ceiling. So you could have a $10,000 high deductible plan, which really is not providing much coverage for the individual. These are state resources, and I think the bill could be dramatically improved if we did have a threshold for that high deductible amount. The last point that I would like to make is a section in the bill, Section 6, regarding MCHA. And the language on page 3 in Section 6 says that the Health Care Access Fund has to backfill any the cost of these policies in MSHA. So what that means is if somebody has a pre-existing condition and they're turned down in the private sector, they would get their insurance from MSHA with the Health Care Access Fund picking up all the costs of that. We don't know what the impact of that is going to be to the Health Care Access Fund. We are suggesting that maybe there might be a way to find a balance, have the Health Care Access Fund pick up the size, the maximum size of the premium contribution, and then have MSHA pick up the rest. So we are proposing some type of balance between MSHA and the Health Care Access Fund rather than having all of it fall to the Health Care Access Fund. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Creakey. Any questions? Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, Ms. Creakey, I don't believe there would be any way for AMSHA to keep track of this group of claims versus the regular AMSHA group of claims. And So I also would be concerned about sort of an invitation to AMSHA to be entirely funded through the Healthcare Access Fund against any deficits they might have in the future. I know that they have come to the legislature to get those kind of funds in the past, but at the present time, I think it would be very unlikely we would be able to do that. So I agree with you on that point.
Ms. Krinke?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we see this as an area of Senator Hand's bill that there might be an opportunity to make some improvements.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Ms. Krinke, what is the average bill some Minnesota patients, somebody who may be on MinCare, would have at a hospital right now?
Ms. Krinke?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it really does vary between hospitals. If it's a trauma case, it'll clearly be well above the $10,000. If it's an average procedure and you don't have a long stay, it could be under that $10,000. But, you know, you can hit $10,000 in a hospital pretty quickly. So I have to believe that we would probably have more uncompensated care above the $10,000. But recognize that Minnesota Care, precisely what the previous speaker said, it's a program that was aimed at more primary care rather than just inpatient care. So it's a balance. But having an overall threshold on the size of the deductible would be helpful for anyone enrolled in this type of program.
Any other questions?
Senator
Sharon.
Thank you. I want to be clear that because of the cap on what under Minnesota Care can be collected at the hospital for hospital costs, it makes sense to me that the Hospital Association would be here in favor of this because your interest is directed towards making those systems whole, whereas the Minnesota Care program, with its focus on earlier intervention, has as its goal, besides helping working families afford access to some reasonable coverage with mental health and chemical dependency coverage, but also prevention so that we can avoid those chronic diseases in that long-term care and the misuse of the emergency room in the hospital system.
Madam Chair, if I may comment, hospitals are no longer just hospitals, though. I do think it's important to recognize that most of the hospitals now operate clinics, outreach clinics, community clinics. We are no longer just the institution of hospitals. And you'll find in most communities now there is an integration with physicians. So it's not just that we operate hospitals on an inpatient basis anymore. We're changing, too.
Thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Yes, Senator Sharon.
That doesn't change the essence of what I was saying.
Yes.
In terms of whether we want long-term cost savings in the healthcare delivery system or not.
Thank you. And I just need to remind the committee that we will be taking a vote. This committee ends in 15 minutes. We have some more testifiers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Ms. Bodine.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Bodine, and I am Manager of Health and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber supports exploring new models to restructure health care in our state. We know that it has to be done to ensure the sustainability of any program moving forward. Specifically, as a chamber, we support models that achieve better outcomes for Minnesotans, decrease the cost of health care, and also decrease the cost of future increases. The Minnesota Chamber believes that Senate File 32, the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program, is an approach to this sustainability. We appreciate Senator Hand's initiative to explore innovative ways to redesign our healthcare model, and we urge you to move this bill forward for further consideration. If we can be of assistance in gathering information from the private sector or additional input, we'd be happy to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bodine. Any questions? Is there anybody else that would like to testify on the bill? Please come forward. State your name.
Hi, Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Lynn Gruber. I'm president of Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. Thank you. A couple of comments. First, I mean, to get back to Senator Berglund, MSHA definitely can identify claims from a certain group. We would just give them a group number. So we can track populations. We do that with our with the Ryan White ADAP folks that have AIDS or HIV positive. So we certainly can identify groups in terms of what their claims are. The concerns we have, first of all, we recognize that it's time to change and that things do need to be changed, but this bill really represents a sea change in public policy regarding the probably the most vulnerable or near most vulnerable Minnesotans, the low income, the working poor. I said this last year when the bill came up, and I would say it again to be consistent. I believe this bill should be in a pilot form, a pilot project. You talk about 100,000 folks, 90,000 folks changing how we do business, how they receive care, how they pay for care overnight in 1 year. It's to be pragmatic, it's too fast. I don't know what the pilot number would be, if it's 2,000 people or three, but you have statisticians that can tell you what you need. Number two, what do we really know about the claims? And I think Senator Marty asked this. I think his question was not what hospital claims, the average hospital claim is, but what is the average claim of a Minnesota Care member? I don't have that. I'm sure somebody from DHS can tell us that, and I think we need to know a lot more about the claims history of this population before we can be really certain of our assumptions and so forth. So I think work needs to be done there. If it's been done, I guess I've not seen the results of it. Number three, you know, MCHA was not designed for low-income people. You have to go back to 1976 when the bill was created by the insurance industry and the legislature. This is a high-risk pool. Our premiums are above market. You know, they can be as much as 25% above the individual market in Minnesota. So to suggest that folks that do not get accepted into the private market can easily afford the MCHA premium, or that the healthcare access fund will come to the rescue, is a very deep matter that you really need to give thought to. And the fourth point I want to make is about how to make MCHA whole. And I use this phrase because when we visited with the insurance agents last year and last year's authors of the bill, we told them our concern is, you know, MCHA was designed to have losses and to run losses. And the law says that whatever premium doesn't cover, which is about 50% of what we need to run the pool, we can gather through an assessments to all health insurers in the state in proportion to their market share. We've still worked with that formula. Problem is there's no contribution from self-insured companies, which are a big part of the market. So to suggest that by making the switch over to private insurance plans for the Minnesota Care folks, you will make MSHA whole by then going to the healthcare access fund to cover anything the premium doesn't cover, I don't think is realistic. You don't really want to damage what you have there. I greatly respect Senator Berglund for all that she's supported Minnesota Care and tried to be very prudent in the funding of it and so forth, but I guess I would just say this off the cuff, that you might have to increase the provider tax in order to cover the costs that the insurance industry is suggesting or insurance agents are suggesting would need to be covered by MCHA. I don't have an answer for you. I'm just saying they are serious concerns. With all due respect to Senator Hahn and the idea of trying something different to save the state money, I just would not be doing my job if I didn't come forward with these concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gruber. Any questions? Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for paying attention to this discussion. I understand this does represent a departure from the way that we have looked at health insurance in Minnesota for low-income folks. One of the things I would like to point out, and I've forgotten one of the witnesses talked about, that this is an approach that is more focused on catastrophic care rather than non-catastrophic care. And I think there's some merit in that description. insurance is typically used to cover things that are large costs that are maybe difficult to predict, and we should think about insurance in that way, I believe. What we have is a structure in Minnesota Care that is, as was described, almost the reverse of that. The second thing I'd like to talk about or point out is that I think there's an assumption that whoever is currently in Minnesota Care is going to be on Minnesota Care or in a policy like Minnesota Care forever. And I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think that we recognize there's a fair amount of mobility in people's lives as they mature, as things in their life circumstances change. And I believe that what we are trying to offer here is an approach to providing a catastrophic insurance plan for people who have a need and who are low income, and to make sure that they are covered for those things that are high cost. I think a lot of people who are in Minnesota Care don't realize that if they do end up in the hospital and they do end up having something of large cost occur, they are not covered. And what they set themselves up for then is essentially liquidation of their assets and becoming a medical assistance person. And I think that's a huge danger for people, people who may not have anticipated that in their life, but they may find themselves in that circumstance if they have a large cost health care issue that they have to deal with and they're currently on Minnesota Care. So a couple of things to keep in mind. I think, too, we all are interested in the budget. We're all interested in how we can do things and save money. We know we're going to have to do some adjustment to the budget this year. We think this is a plan that we should consider. It emphasizes the ideas of personal responsibility. We do trust that people will be able to make good judgments about their health care, that they will be able to make good determinations of what kinds of care they need, what kinds of coverage they need. And we want to give them some opportunity to make those kinds of decisions. I'm confident that the insurance markets, as you have in your packet, some descriptions of plans, and there are others, and perhaps there will be more that will be developed. I think part of the challenge, again, in Minnesota with our whole health care issue is how do we encourage the development of more robust insurance models to cover more people in an affordable way. So, members, I encourage you to support the movement of this bill. It will go on to, I believe, from here, the Commerce Committee. I am interested in having further discussions with the Hospital Association. They mentioned they had a few issues they wanted to talk about, and we will certainly meet with them and try to see if we can find ways to improve the bill and the issues that they talked about. But members, I'd appreciate your support on the bill and would ask at this point that we move the bill I don't know what the exact motion is, Madam Chair. Maybe you can help me with that. But I'd like to move that we pass the bill to and forward it to the Commerce Committee.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment. But before I offer the amendment, I just have a couple of more comments to make. And that is, when we talked about whether hospitals would be made whole or not under this bill, we failed to talk about the assumption that 10% of the people in Minnesota Care will not take up the policy. So we will have a 10% increase in the number of Minnesota Care people that will be uninsured and will have no coverage when they need hospitalization. And that will increase the uncompensated care burden on hospitals. There were comments about the federal reform, and I think it's premature to say this is moving us toward the kind of reform we'll see in the federal government's plan, because we don't know what the federal benefits set will be yet. We won't know that until this spring. I doubt very much that the federal benefits set's going to have a $3,000, $6,000, or $10,000 deductible in it. So I think we're going to need to be much closer to what Minnesota Care is than what this bill would take us to. And then finally, I'd just like to say that in terms of who this program will hurt, it will hurt the sickest and lowest income people in Minnesota Care today, because they will have the least amount of flexible income to make up the gaps that this policy will leave them with. And Madam Chair, with that, I'd like to offer the A9 amendment.
Senator Berglund moves to amend the Senate File 32 with the A9 amendment. Do we have that in our packet, Senator Berglund? Is it passed out? wait till it gets passed out.
They assumed that 90% would pay the premium.
Senator Berkley, you can start.
Yes, Madam Chair. What this amendment would do, it would make sure that the cost sharing that individuals would have in the Minnesota Care Program under Senator Hahn's bill would not exceed 10% of the enrollee's income. Now, I realize this would still be quite a bit of increase for some people in the Minnesota Care Program, but it would be better than what we have in the bill in front of us. And so this would guarantee a more affordable plan would be available to people than what Senator Hahn is making available in his bill before us today.
Everyone has the amendment. Senator Hahn?
Madam Chair, I at this point I'd oppose the amendment. I'd be happy to talk with Senator Berglund about concerns that she might have to improve the bill, but it's not clear to me at this point accepting this amendment into the bill would, I'm not quite certain how that would work. So I guess at this point I'd oppose the amendment.
Any further discussion?
Chair, I'd like a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested.
Benson.
Nay.
Berglund.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Hall.
No.
Higgins.
Yes.
Hoffman.
No.
Lori.
Yes.
Marty.
Yes.
Newman.
No.
Nino.
No.
Rosen.
No.
Sharon.
Yes.
Han.
No.
Senator Berglund? Senator Rosen?
Senator Berglund.
Well, Madam Chair, I have another amendment since we're not going to have an affordable plan available.
Okay. Actually, we can start passing that out if that's okay. The A9 amendment, there being five ayes and eight noes, the amendment does not prevail. Senator Berglund.
So I'd like to offer the A8 amendment.
Senator Berglund moves the A8 amendment. Is there any discussion?
What is it?
We'll wait until it gets passed out. We're going to be moving here pretty quick.
The A8 amendment would make sure that any resulting savings that would be generated because of the bill would remain in the Health Care Access Fund. The money that is being saved in the fiscal note comes from the Health Care Access Fund. I think that it would be important that any savings that be generated, since they would be savings to the Health Care Access Fund, stay in the Health Care Access Fund.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Senator Berglund's intent. However, part of what we're hoping to do is save some cost to the general fund. One of the things that we're confronted with this year is a budget issue that we need to find ways to reduce the spending in the general fund. And so at this point, I'd oppose the amendment.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, is that an admission that you plan to use the Health Care Access Fund to balance the general fund? We have never done that in all the budget deficits that we faced prior to this year.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, no, that's not an admission of that at all. It's just to the point that we can save some money, I think that should accrue to the general fund at this point.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, we also have a deficit in the health care access fund, and I would think it'd be more important if we're saving money in the health care access fund for that money that is saved to go toward that deficit and not the general fund deficit. And since this is an important issue to providers across the state, Madam Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Senator Sharon?
I just would add to this, Senator Hahn, that you'd consider this again because of what we were hearing about the backfill for MCHA with money from the Minnesota Care Fund, that there be adequate resources to accomplish that.
Senator Berglund moves to amend the Senate File 32 with the A8 amendment. The Secretary will take the roll. The Chair votes nay.
Benson?
Nay.
Berglund?
Aye.
Fischbach?
No.
Hall?
No.
Higgins?
Aye.
Hoffman?
No.
Lori?
Yes.
Marty?
Yes.
Newman?
No.
Nienau?
Nay.
Rosen?
Nay.
Sharon?
Yes.
And Hahn?
No.
There being, let's see, five yeses and eight noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Madam
Chair. Higgins.
Madam Chair, I have the A6 amendment.
Senator Higgins moves the A6 amendment.
And Madam Chair, I've been really worried as people were speaking about these various plans and the deductibles and the costs, about the real likelihood that people would just go find a plan that they thought was the cheapest plan and that they would end up with inadequate coverage or the wrong kind of coverage. So this amendment would require that the Commissioners of Human Services and Commerce establish financial and coverage suitability tests to help the enrollees in selecting the appropriate health care plan. And it also says the insurance agents must market to an enrollee only those health care plans that are appropriate for the enrollee based on these suitability tests. I think it really makes sense. You know, people are going to be in a whole new field of trying to find a plan that works for them, works for their families. But these are very low-income folks, and they may decide that they are just going to skip the substance abuse coverage or the mental health coverage or the chemical dependency coverage when it's really what they need, and we'll find in a place where they are at the hospital emergency rooms or elsewhere because they don't have the coverage that they should have gotten. So I'd like your support for this A6 amendment.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I oppose the amendment. I think it's important to remember that insurance agents are licensed to perform this very function, and they do it every day. I understand from talking with the agents that the largest section or segment of their customer base are people who are purchasing plans very similar to the ones that we've talked about today. So agents are bound by ethical considerations as well as by duty to make sure that they are not selling a plan that is not appropriate for the people who are buying it. So I think that this level of oversight is intrusive, and I think in some respects it might be disrespectful of people. I think that we ought to believe that people, even if they are lower income, certainly have the judgment and the ability to decide with a competent agent to determine what insurance is best for them. So, members, I would oppose the amendment.
Is there further discussion? Senator Higgins has moved the A6 amendment. If there is no further discussion, the question is on the
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call as well.
The roll call has been requested. The Secretary will take the roll. The Chair votes nay.
Benson.
Nay.
Berglund.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Hall.
No.
Higgins.
Yes.
Hoffman.
No.
Lori.
Yes.
Marty.
Yes.
Newman.
No.
Nino.
No.
Rosen.
No.
Sharon.
Yes.
Han.
No.
Let me guess, 5-8.
There being 5 nays, 8 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I have an A7 amendment.
Senator Berglund moves the A7 amendment. Senator Berglund, would you like to explain the A7 amendment, please?
Madam Chair, one of my concerns about the bill, I have several major concerns, but one of them is about the people that will lose coverage. And so this amendment says that anyone who meets the criteria for Minnesota Care, as a result of the bill, would be then enrolled in the regular Minnesota Care program. And I think because of the date change in Senator Hand's amendment, I think I need to change on line 1.5, the month January to October.
Oral amendment has been.
I'll incorporate that into the amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion, Senator Hand?
Members, I would oppose the amendment. It's not clear to me how we would do this. We don't right now. There are a lot of people who are eligible for Minnesota Care and are not enrolled. I think changing the structure of coverage or the whether it's a private insurance plan or Minnesota Care, I don't know that that in and of itself is a prohibitive hurdle to someone's insurance, but I don't believe that this is a necessary amendment, especially since we know that there are people today who are not covered under Minnesota Care, even though they're eligible. And I believe that under our proposed plan that we might be able to insure more of those folks that currently are not insured at all. So I would oppose the amendment.
Any further Madam discussion? Chair. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, the fiscal note assumes that 10% of the people will fall through the cracks under the bill, Senator Hahn. And, you know, people that have to go and enroll with an insurance company and be denied and then go and enroll with MSHA, that is a much more cumbersome process. And if they find out that what they're going to get is a $500 or $1,000 or a $3,000 deductible and they're not going to be able to afford the deductible, they may feel like they can't pay premiums then at all, and they will not any longer have coverage. I want to make sure we don't create more uninsured because of your bill. This amendment will do it. I urge your support.
Senator Hand, any further discussions on the amendment? And we are aware of the one on lines 1.5, January has been changed to October.
I think it fits better with the amendment that Senator Hahn made to his
Thank
own
you,
bill.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Is there any further discussion? The question is on the A7 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those
aye.
Opposed say nay.
Nay. No.
The motion does not prevail. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I have the A5 amendment.
Senator Higgins moves the A5 amendment.
And I'm sure I'm worried that the there will be people who
Senator Higgins, can you just wait 1 second till the author of the bill gets the A5 amendment?
Sure.
figures.
Madam Chair, I'm worried
Senator Higgins.
Enrollees will be denied coverage by health care plans as they're trying to work through and get the right policy for their families, but maybe not know why they were denied coverage and what they might possibly be able to do to change that when they talk to the next company and in hopes that they aren't denied. So this amendment would state that if an enrollee is denied coverage by a health plan company under this program, the health plan must provide to the enrollee and the commissioner a written statement of the reason for the denial. It also requires that the agent must assist the enrollee with an application and enrollment into AMCHA at that point. And it also requires the commissioner to provide the legislature each year a summary and analysis of the reasons why people were denied coverage. I think
Senator
this is
Hand.
Just a good way for us to gather some information to see that what we're trying to do is actually what is happening. And I hope Senator Hand will support this amendment.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's my understanding that a person who's denied coverage does get currently a statement from the cover, the insurer, for the reason why they were not covered. The reason for the denial. So I think this is being done currently by private insurers. I don't believe that they have to provide the reason for the denial to the commissioner. I think there may be some privacy issues involved with that. I'm not sure that that's appropriate. Insurance agents also very routinely assist clients with application to the MCHIP program. So I'm not sure that this is a necessary amendment. I think it does create some issues with potentially with privacy of individuals, so I would oppose the amendment.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the question is on the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail.
Well, then, Madam Chair, I know that Senator Hand would like the A4 amendment.
Senator Reagan moves the A4 amendment.
Senator
Higgins. And Madam Chair, I know that all people who consider themselves fiscal conservatives are concerned that we have a good return on our investment, that we are getting quality for what we are providing. And so this amendment would require the Commissioners of Health and Human Services to develop and implement a quality assurance and outcomes monitoring system to develop or to measure the return on the state's financial investment in funding health care coverage under this program and the extent to which it meets all federal requirements.
Senator Higgins has moved the A4 amendment. Is there any discussion? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would oppose the amendment. I'm not quite sure what the intent here is. I don't believe that it's something that is necessary to do, and I think it would add additional cost when we're at a time when we're looking to make sure that we be as prudent as we can in the monies that we spend. So I'd oppose the amendment.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
I don't know that you can tell whether you're getting a good return on your investment until you get some information, and this is the information gathering mode. And otherwise, we're all just blowing smoke about whether it works or it doesn't work.
So, Senator Higgins, is this something that you would have to get a fiscal note, or you would just assume the department would absorb, like we've assumed many other things for them to absorb?
Madam Chair, we would have to.
Senator Higgins.
As it goes on to its various committees, I'm sure there will be more than one fiscal note developed by this. And as amendments are added, fiscal notes are amended. And this may save money. It may cost money. We won't know until we get a new one done after this is adopted, because I know you would really like to vote for this.
You're so adorable, Senator Crickens. Is there any other further discussion on the question of the A4 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I have the A3 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A3 amendment. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. This amendment indicates that chemical dependency and mental health services are covered and provided and shall be reimbursed by the commissioner on a fee-for-service basis. I'm hoping that the committee will support this as long as we're expanding the business for the private insurance companies and the agents that work with these persons. I think that we should ask them to share in the risk and not do cherry picking in terms of who they will and will not cover. And so I'm hoping that you will support this bill, and I would ask for a roll call and that the vote be recorded.
A roll call has been requested. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, again, I would oppose this amendment. I think that there clearly would be some cost to do this. I'm not quite sure how this would work in the structure of the bill, but the reimbursement rates that we have defined in the plan do cover chemical dependency and mental health services. So I would oppose this amendment.
Senator Sharon has moved to amend Senate File 32 with the A3 amendment. Is there any further discussion, Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, in case people missed it, when Ms. Afterholden testified, she did testify that benefits are available under the Minnesota Care Plan today that are not available in the private marketplace, and that these benefits are very cost effective in terms of reducing and keeping people out of the hospital. And so I think this is an important amendment, and I hope people will support it.
Any further question or discussion? The question is on the A3 amendment. All those in, a roll call has been requested. I'm sorry. The secretary will take the roll. The chairs votes nay.
Benson.
Nay.
Berglund.
Aye.
Fishbach.
No.
Hall.
No.
Higgins.
Aye.
Hoffman.
No.
Lori.
Aye.
Marty.
Aye.
Newman.
No.
Nino?
No.
Rosen?
No.
Sharon?
Yes.
Hahn?
No.
It's recorded. That's good. There being five nays, eight ayes, the amendment does not prevail. Excuse me?
Madam Chair, I think Senator, you announced the vote the other way around.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry. Okay. There being eight ayes and five nays, the amendment does not.
No.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you very much.
Oh, I like that.
I need an energy drink.
Thank you very much, committee.
There being eight nays and five ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Thank you, Senator Hahn. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Any other amendments? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, when Senator Hahn, the handout of your opponents talked about reducing the problem of cost shifting, and I was reading that about the same time Mr. Tyler was saying that people could go to these community clinics and tell them, they ask them to waive their co-payment, which I think is a pretty bizarre thing to start introducing the bill, talking about how you're hoping people can waive co-payments and affect cost shift to somebody else. But I have real problems with the fact, I think the lack of chemical dependency and mental health, I think people are going to just, a lot of people with mental illness and chemical abuse problems don't realize that in themselves. They're going to choose the coverage without it. Even if they had coverage with it, they're not going to be able to afford the co-payments, deductibles. I think you're basically pushing a lot of people out I'd be surprised if 90% do take this, because I frankly think a lot of people are going to be, a year or two later, they're going to have debts they can't pay. And I think that comes up to uncompensated care, which is doctors and clinics and hospitals are going to just have more of the same cost shifting. I think you're cost shifting in a different way. Minnesota Care, I agree with you. The hospital cap is inappropriate, but I think you're going to actually cause more cost shifting than the other way. That's my perspective.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, what happens to me if I'm on Minnesota Care today and I'm receiving chemotherapy and tomorrow I am shifted over to a policy that has an AMCHA policy, let's say, that has a $500 deductible? What happens with me in the middle of my chemotherapy?
Senator Hahn.
And Madam Chair, I'm going to ask John Tyler here if you'd like to respond to that.
Mr. Sure. Tyler.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund. On question number 13 on the page that says waiver of pre-existing condition, is part of the MCHA application. Having prior continuous coverage through Minnesota Care, medical assistance, or other form of public program does qualify as prior continuous coverage. So the six-month pre-existing condition limitation is waived, and they would move directly into the MCHA plan without a pre-existing condition limitation.
But I would be paying,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Mr. Tyler, I would begin paying a $500 deductible toward my chemotherapy, and after that I would be paying a 20% copayment. Is that correct?
Mr. Tyler.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, there is a $100 deductible for prescription drugs and a $400 deductible for medical hospitalization and so forth. So after a $400 deductible, it would go 80-20 after that to a maximum out-of-pocket of $3,000. And 100% thereafter is paid in full.
Right. And so,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Mr. Tyler, if I have, I am a part of a couple that makes $15,000 a year, I will have this $500 deductible to pay. I will have $500 to continue my chemotherapy.
Mr. Tyler?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I think the situation is one that if a couple is making $15,000, I don't think they would be on Minnesota Care. I think medical assistance would probably be the appropriate
form. No, they'd be on Minnesota
form.
Care.
Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, they would be on Minnesota Care.
Well, to answer your question,
Mr.
yes.
Mr. Tyler?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, yeah, the answer would be yes. And they would be paid at a rate of reasonable customary charges for in or out-of-network services, and they would be free to choose the provider of their choice in or out-of-network.
Madam Chair, I would
Senator
just
Berglund.
Point out to people that the vast majority of people in Minnesota Care are at or below 150% of poverty. So I would urge the committee to vote against this bill today.
Any further discussion? Senator Hahn has moved that Senate File 32 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Senator, could we have a roll call, please?
Yes, a roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Benson.
Aye.
Berglund.
No.
Fischbach.
Yes.
Hall.
Aye.
Higgins.
No.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Lori.
No.
Marty.
No.
Newman.
Yes.
Nino.
Aye.
Sharon.
No.
Hahn.
Aye.
There being 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The bill as amended is recommended to pass.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate
thank you.
The
and members. There being no further business, the committee is adjourned. However, just want to remind everybody tomorrow, the hearing will be on the forecast changes to the medical assistance program. And Wednesday, Dr. Doug Wood from the Mayo Clinic will address the problems and pitfalls and opportunities in health care reform. So, again, the committee is adjourned.